Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Cousins still has it, running for the corner. He is in. Touchdown. Good fake, good run by Kirk Cousins.
And good decision.
Redskins right back in there.
Grant and Danny welcoming you back on 106.7 The Fan. Pleased to be joined as we are after each and every Redskins game all season long, exclusively by the Redskins starting quarterback, Kirk Cousins. And Kirk, I wish we didn't even have to talk about that final week of the season because it was an ugly one all the way around. But here we are. Your thoughts first on your performance and just the game. It got away early.
Yeah, just not a good game all the way around. You know, I didn't play well enough, and the results showed. And frustrating way to end the season. You know, we talked about wanting to finish 8-8, wanting to leave on a high note, all the reasons to finish with a win. Had a chance to finish with a 3-game win streak, and you know, that's again a reminder of how tough this game or this league is. That, you know, if you don't finish strong or you have a poor outing like that, it really does kind of put a damper on my feelings walking away from the season and how we did. What had been, you know, a lot of positives. You know, you end up just kind of feeling frustrated with the final result.
Obviously, last year in Week 17 against the Giants, you guys had a poor performance. It kept you out of the playoffs, so there was more at stake. But I felt like it lingered. I don't know how many times Bruce Allen referenced that game in the offseason. It clearly stuck in his craw. And I wonder, you know, this was, for you, your worst game of the season, and for the team, probably one of the worst games in the last couple of years. I guess I just wonder, do they mean more at the end of the year because they're the last one, so people think about them longer? For you, do you kind of treat it like it was a Week 11 game and you move on after a week or two? How does that work?
Well, yeah, I think that, you know, for a guy like myself, I understand the bigger picture. And while it does sit with you, just like any game does, win or lose for a few days, you know, as we get removed from it, you'll start to look at the bigger picture of the whole season. But right now, it's still pretty raw and you're focused on that last performance. But it's human nature to always remember how you finish. Oftentimes people forget how you start, but they remember how you finish. And that's why we talked all December, even after the loss to the Chargers, about the importance of finishing strong, regardless of whether it was going to lead to the playoffs or not. And, you know, unfortunately in the final game, we didn't finish strong. But, you know, as we move towards the offseason and towards, you know, preparing for next year, you know, you start to look at the bigger picture and where you're trying to go and what you're trying to build beyond just one game.
Kirk Cousins Fan Question of the Week is presented by Mitsubishi Electric Cooling and Heating. Mitsubishi Electric Systems can heat or cool multiple rooms or just one room at a time with no ductwork while saving you up to 40% off your energy bills compared to traditional HVAC. Learn more at MitsubishiComfort.com. Fan question comes from Mark in Leesburg, Kirk. And the overall numbers that you got against the NFC East are very good. Buoyed by 28 touchdowns, 10 picks, I believe I've got that right, against Philly and Dallas combined. Something about the Giants, 8 touchdowns, 14 picks, other numbers, of course. But what is it about the Giants that's given you so much trouble?
Well, I would give Coach Spagnuolo a lot of credit, their defensive coordinator. I felt like he's always done a good job against us with his scheme. Just creating confusion and bringing multiple coverages and then disguising coverage as well so that, you know, the identification of knowing where to go with the football or where to send the offensive line in protection is just not easy. It's a battle on every snap. And, you know, I've also made it easy on them or made it tough on me with some of the plays I've made that are just, you know, poor plays and may not have a lot to do with anything but just making a poor play. And unfortunately, yeah, a few of them have happened consistently against the Giants, but I don't know if there's any real coincidence or correlation. It's just happened. But, you know, I look forward to playing them in the future and trying to right those wrongs and improve that stat line because, you know, it certainly has been frustrating for me. And I think as I continue to play, I can, you know, fix that and hopefully have much better outcome against the Giants in the future.
Kirk, the numbers of guys on injured reserve is just staggering. The number of guys that are banged up and you know weren't able to play or weren't able to be themselves throughout the course of this year. We know the numbers. We know some of these names. Looking back on it, what was the one guy that was kind of the tipping point to you that once he was hurt, you guys were never the same?
Oh, man, that's a good question. I do feel that, you know, I've said many times that if we lose Chris Thompson, it's going to be tough. I credit our scouting department with the way they found other running backs to still make us functional. And that was impressive that they did that. But I thought losing Chris was tough. Anytime you lose your tackles, it makes life tough. And so, in the Dallas game on Thursday night when we lost Morgan for a while, and then Ty, who had been practicing all week at left guard, had to go to right tackle after having been a left tackle. It was just asking a lot of him, and that certainly was hard to move the football. So then you lose Trent and you lose Ty in the last game, and now we're down the line with our tackles. So, I just think it was a combination of people, and certainly Jordan Reed has been a key factor for us, especially on third downs. And, we didn't do as well this year on third down, and so you wonder if not having Jordan for much of the year affected that greatly. And I don't even focus on the defensive side of the ball, where I'm sure there were some people that you say, if we had this or that guy healthy, then maybe it makes a big difference. So there's a lot of pieces. Guys all have roles and contribute in different ways. And when you lose each one of them, it affects the game in a different way.
Kirk Cousins on Grant and Danny here on 106.7 The Fan. So give us your timeline then. We've got a huge event coming up with you on Friday that you wanted to have for a charitable reason so that you can help raise some money for a good cause here in D.C. and also talk to listeners. And you're going to answer a lot of questions candidly about your future. Looking forward to that. But this is your first week after the end of a season where you said you had a lot of things you needed to figure out and that you wanted to see kind of how things developed. I mean, what are your feelings right now? And what's the timeline for you in trying to put some thoughts together?
Yeah, I'm in no hurry. The structure of the off season and the way the league is set up, a lot of stuff happens in March. And so that's when I expect things to take place, between now and then. I don't want to be spinning my wheels, trying to get things done that aren't going to get done. So I'm in no hurry, and I'm going to go to Michigan this week just quickly and then get back here to DC for our event on Friday and then head down to Atlanta and spend some time with family and spend time with my son and, just relax. But at the same time, I like to get back to work right away. I've learned that my body operates best by just continuing to train and throw and not taking too much time off. So, I'll be watching the playoffs like everybody else and already starting to kind of build up and build back up for next year.
How do you watch the playoffs? I mean, can you just sort of kick back with your feet up and watch as a fan? Or do you have kind of an analytical eye, meaning, hey, this is what's working now. This is where the league's going. This is a trend. Do you do a thing where you, hey, let's adopt some principles that are working? Or can you just kind of kick your feet up and watch like a schlub like me?
That's a great question. I think when I was a younger player, maybe my first or second year, I was more watching like a schlub, like you said. As I've played more and grown in this league, I found myself more and more frustrated that we're not playing. I find myself watching it more as a student, studying situations and defenses and really having played now, I have a better understanding of what it takes. And, I think this will be the first year where I watch the playoffs and watch the top teams and feel like the Redskins are not that far from that. I think when you look at teams like the Saints and the Vikings and how, we went toe-to-toe with them, played them really well and moved the football. I don't know that was the case back in 2015. We went and played Carolina. They were the top team in the NFC and they took it to us. I watched that Super Bowl, Carolina and Denver, and said, I don't feel like we're there yet. We still have a ways to go. And this year I feel like I'm going to watch the NFC and feel like we're right there. I mean, whether it's the Rams, the Vikings, the Saints, I just feel like we played them all tough and, have a lot of reason to feel good about our chances next year and when where the team is headed. So, I think that's an encouraging thing to take away.
Kirk Cousins on Grant and Danny. Three seasons now as a full-time starter, playing in every single game, unquestioned as the top guy on the roster at the position. Do you feel like with everything that happened around you, the support and some of those things that weren't available because of some of the injuries, this ended up being your best season? I know you felt that way about it at the midway point when we talked about it. I'm curious. Obviously, the numbers will tell their own story. 27 touchdowns. You topped that once. 13 picks after the three yesterday, a couple more than you've had in the past. But you look at some of the numbers and you look at the context, I want to know where you'd place this among the three seasons.
Yeah, I think the last game certainly made it feel a little different. And, you know, I'd like to think that one game doesn't change the landscape of a whole season. But, you know, I think certainly when you start to look at numbers, it can sway it a little bit. But, no, I do feel like when you start to factor in all that took place, I also felt like from a schedule standpoint, we played really good teams, really good defenses. You know, we went to a lot of tough environments. And, no, I was pleased with the way that I continued to improve. You know, we've talked about that continuous improvement. I don't feel like I've plateaued as a player. I know there may be some people who say, okay, he kind of is what he is now. But I think that I'm continuing to get better. The game's slowing down. And I'm still interested to see how high I can go because I do think each year I've gotten better and had a greater command of how to play in this league. And, you know, until I feel like I've plateaued, I think that's pretty exciting because I'm still kind of trying to ascend as someone in this league, trying to see how high I can go.
Is that something you notice in game, Kirk, where maybe you pick up on something you wouldn't have before and it's kind of obvious that that's something in the past you wouldn't have done? Speak more maybe about kind of what might be next or what you think could still come. This year, the big development was probably the scrambling and the extending of plays.
Yeah, exactly. That's what comes to mind right away is just when stuff wasn't there, being able to break the pocket, run for a first down here and there. You know, I thought I did a little more in the zone read game this year, running the football. But, you know, just making plays off schedule. I thought I did a good job of, you know, giving guys opportunity throws at times, doing more of that than I had in the past, although I still think we can do even more of that going forward. And, yeah, just working with a different cast, you know. I mean, I think the narrative after the last two seasons was, you know, he's basically dependent on having Pro Bowl receivers around him and a Pro Bowl tight end, and he won't be able to do that if he doesn't have that. And, you know, with some of the injuries this year and letting some guys go in free agency, you know, that wasn't the same story, and yet we were still able to move the ball and be productive, and I think that was where maybe I was able to show some growth as a player. And, you know, I'm excited again for where that could lead in the future because every year I've gotten better, so as I move forward, you know, I'd like to think that'll continue to happen.
Kirk, you're a pretty aware guy as far as the guys go. You don't walk around with your blinders on, I think, in a lot of ways. After you guys played Denver, Von Miller sung your praises, your own teammates, guys like I'm probably forgetting people, but Jamison Crowder, Trent Williams, a number of guys kind of went out of their way to say some really glowing things about you as a player. How much does that mean? Just thinking about your journey. I know you've talked about this a lot with us in the past and in public other places. Just the fact that, you know, you did what you did to get to Michigan State, and then you had to fight and climb, and you win that job. You win the job here, et cetera. What does it mean to you where guys that are respected, well-established pros are saying some pretty incredible things about you?
Well, that's a great question. You know, I've always said, you know, it's a goal of mine when I walk away from this game that teammates speak highly of me. Obviously, you want fans to speak highly of you. You want coaches. You know, people around the game, but if your teammates don't speak highly of you, all that doesn't really matter. And if the people who don't really know you, they're on the outside and they think you're a great player, but your teammates think differently, you know, that would be a shame. So for me to have teammates who think highly of me, that's going to always be a goal of mine and probably is as important to me as anything I do in my career is to walk away and have teammates 20, 30 years from now say, I played with that guy. He's the real deal. He walks the walk, doesn't just talk the talk, and I enjoyed playing with him, and it was an honor, and that means a great deal to me, and I'll continue to try to carry myself in a way and work and prepare and lead and, you know, try to produce in such a way that teammates will always speak positively of my contribution, and, you know, ultimately, if we can win and win consistently, that's going to do that probably better than anything.
I'm sure there are a couple people turning on their radio going, wait, why aren't you asking him what's going on in the next couple of months? Well, we got 2 hours we'll be talking with Kirk Cousins exclusively, and you guys will be asking him questions, and he'll be answering all of them on Friday. Tickets are available for a live event. All the money raised is going to go to the D.C. Dream Center and a charity of Kirk's choice, which is really cool. Tickets are available at jamandjava.com. People have a chance to go buy those tickets right now, Kirk, and I know you're hoping that they do.
Yeah, it'll be a good opportunity to just give back and you know, that's what I want to be about. I don't want to be someone who consumes and takes. I want to be someone who makes deposits in other people's lives and makes deposits into this city and into this fan base. And I think this event will be a great way to make a deposit try to be open and communicate as best I can. And, hopefully people can hear where I'm coming from and just continue to, be an ambassador for the Redskins and stay positive about where we're headed. And it should be a good conversation. Part of the reason I like doing it is to hear from the fans. I like to hear their questions directly rather than have a middleman. And I think that's what the event will be all about.
Kirk, always a blast, buddy. Appreciate the time. And we will see you on Friday, my friend. Enjoy the time.
All right. Thanks, guys. Stay warm.
Kirk Cousins.
See you, pal.
On Grant and Danny, we will try. You're listening to 106.7 The Fan. Kirk Cousins on Grant and Danny moments ago. If you missed any part of that conversation, we'll re-air it for you at 1 o'clock today. It'll always be podcasted as soon as the show is over at grantanddanny.com/audio. A few of the specifics I took out of the interview with Kirk. Good question by you on which was the toughest injury to overcome. He pointed to Chris Thompson, which I think is correct. I mean, that seemed to be the one injury. He was the linchpin holding the whole thing together. He was making plays in the passing game. When he was no longer available as the safety valve underneath, it just seemed like plays were not being made off schedule and first downs weren't being turned into the game-changing 20, 30-yard game.
Numbers speak to that. You averaged 50-some less yards per game. You averaged 7 less points per game without Chris Thompson. That's the one. You can get over Jordan Reed not being there. You could scheme around. You can get over Trent Williams not being in the lineup every time. You could scheme around it. That's the one they couldn't fix. And if you told me that before the season, I would have said you're crazy. But we saw it through 11 games, really through most of the New Orleans game. They're different with him.
Yeah, they just were probably him and Cousins vying for the MVP of the offense. I mean, one or the other. You could make the case. In hindsight, it was Thompson. But through three quarters of the year, it was one of those two guys. The third down back, as we like to think of him, as a running back. But he was more than that this year. He was the best back on this team. And he was arguably their best playmaker on offense, really start to finish, and that's without him playing in the last month of the year.
Right, you topped 20 points once without him.
Another point from Cousins that I thought was interesting from the interview we did with him. He said, quote, "This will be the first year where I watch the playoffs and watch the top teams and feel like the Redskins are not that far from that." Points out how we, he did say we, because some people thought it was weird that he said the Redskins there. But his next sentence, he said we. But he said, points out that they played the Rams, the Saints, the Chiefs, the Vikings, among other playoff teams, either very close in losses or beat them. In the case of the Rams, they beat them. In the case of the Saints, they outplayed them for 56 minutes. So at first, that comment just kind of sounds like coach speak, player speak. Of course, you feel like you're not that far off. The Browns could say that. Hugh Jackson could say, I'm going to be watching the playoffs thinking we almost beat Pittsburgh in week 17.
Right.
Well, he makes a really good point, though. They beat the Rams. They beat the Seahawks, who almost made the playoffs. They had the Saints beat. They had the Chiefs beat if Doxson makes a catch in the end zone. They had the 8-point game against Minnesota where they scored over 30 and racked up yards on one of the best defenses in the league. And I made this case a month ago, too. I do feel like this team is closer to those other top teams in the conference. The only team that they really had no chance against this year was the Philadelphia Eagles. And the Eagles, by the way, are not themselves anymore either.
No,
Nate Sudfeld was
apart,
running
yeah.
around for them this weekend. But I agree with him. And he pointed out that Panthers game a couple years ago where you get waxed by Carolina and then they're the best team in the NFC. The gap has closed a little bit. That may mean nothing if he leaves, though, and you can't establish some momentum.
Man, just thinking about this, I always do this. Once the Redskins are eliminated, usually it's like in October or whatever, maybe sometimes November, and I start looking at draft boards and whatever else. I always think, how close are they to these different teams? And I thought this was a telling thing that the Cousins spoke of as well. Early on, when you lose and you're done, you go, yeah, we're not really close to what Carolina was, that 15-1 team that waxed us a couple seasons ago, or the team that went to the Super Bowl. We weren't really that close. He felt like they were closer. At least he said as much. And that's something you and I have debated an awful lot. I think if everybody's back, maybe you're closer, but you've got so many guys on 1 year and you're going to have turnover of 20-plus players, maybe even Cousins himself. I wonder how close they really are.
Well, that's the question, is the carryover? Because he may not be back, and so it doesn't matter.
Right.
And as you said, half the roster could be turned over. But the point is, and I think this is impossible to refute, this year specifically, the gap between the Redskins at full health and the Saints and the Rams and those other teams, we saw them play those teams and what it looked like,
mm-hmm.
is not as large as in the past when they had no chance to go beat Carolina, as he pointed out. Another quote that I thought was interesting, Danny. I'm continuing to get better. The game is still slowing down. Where he got better, when stuff wasn't there, being able to break the pocket and make plays off schedule. I definitely think, unless you just made up your mind at some point and decided this guy is who he is, you saw this year that he made major strides in that regard.
I think so. Again, you got worse at seven positions. You count two outside wide receivers. The production went down dramatically. Your two best guys on the outside are Ryan Grant and Terrell Pryor for half the season. I mean, just a disaster in terms of replacing Garcon and Jackson. You got worse at left tackle. You got worse at tight end. Got worse production at running back, at left guard, at center. You got worse on the majority of your offense. And your quarterback had the average of his last two seasons, where it was always supposed to be, the only reason it's happening is because Jordan Reed's great, because Jackson's great, because Garcon's great. You had infinitely worse everything, and the numbers were still just okay. Now, that doesn't satisfy a lot of Redskins fans, and I understand that because you don't win enough games at the end of the day. But to me, there's no question in my mind that throwing Ryan Grant open or instructing Capri Bibbs, no, line up here, dude,
yeah,
you know, 7 seconds before the play starts, that's a greater achievement than just checking it down to DeSean Jackson having him run for 100 yards.
Well, how about the quote? Maybe his most powerful quote of the whole thing was, I think the narrative about me was that I was just basically benefiting from Pro Bowl receivers and a Pro Bowl tight end, and if I didn't have those guys, I'd be screwed. And I proved this year that wasn't the case. You could tell he heard that in the past. He's lucky he's got Pierre Garcon and DeSean Jackson. He's lucky he's got Jordan Reed making him look good. Because you take Jackson's deep threat away, and you take the safety valve that is 100 catches of Pierre Garcon away, and you take away Jordan Reed winning one-on-one matchups on third down, and you leave an inconsistent season from Jamison Crowder and a bunch of Ryan Grant and Maurice Harris and a lot of Josh Doctson either not getting open or dropping balls or being 50-50 on the outside, and he still went for 4,027 touchdowns and a rating over 90 and numbers that are fringe top 10 in the NFL without some of that support. You got a reaction to Kirk Cousins, you can make it 800-636-1067. Remember, if you want to come to our event, 2-hour sit-down with Cousins, me and Danny, Jam and Java in Fairfax. What went wrong? What went right? Your chance to ask him questions, talk to him about his future. Tickets are available. All of the proceeds are going to go to charity. The event is this Friday from 12 to 2. Make sure you're listening to the show on Friday at noon if you can't be at Jam and Java. Brent and Danny, 106.7 The Fan.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. We'll have the audio of the Jay Gruden press conference a little bit later in the show, but I was actually watching parts of the Gruden press conference this morning in and around our show. And one thing that stood out to me, there were a lot of questions, first of all, about Colt McCoy. Why, you ask? Well, because if Kirk Cousins doesn't come back, Colt McCoy is the first logical option as a potential safety replacement starting quarterback as a bridge until you find your guy.
He's going to be the starting quarterback next year. Like if that's the best bet.
Guy, that's overstated.
I think that's the best value bet on the board.
So, a couple things. First of all, you're saying if Cousins is not here.
Yeah, the tea leaves now seem to be the Cousins is gone. It went from let's see what happens, the Redskins may still franchise him. All of a sudden if you aggregate the reporting and aggregate the tweeting and the rumors and whatever else, it's now last game for Kirk Cousins at FedEx. Last time he'll do this. All of a sudden it became
what reports are you referring to? Like, when did you make that decision? Because here's where I'm at on this. I've kind of felt all along like he wasn't coming back because I've never thought the franchise tag was an option at all. The $34 million franchise tag, I just don't think is an option. But I still say there's a decent chance he could come back. Maybe they transition him and he doesn't sign a deal on a transition tag. After the performance on Sunday, as weird as it seems, I actually think it's more likely he's gone. And my reasoning for that, believe it or not, is I think after throwing the three picks, as crazy as it is that they'd make the decision based on a game, I think they're a little bit less likely to spend $34 million on him on a franchise tag, which means it's a little bit more likely that he isn't here. But I'm curious. I've kind of felt all along like he wasn't going to be here, and I do feel that way. But why do you feel that way now?
Well, let me back up. My personal bet and belief still is that they franchise him for a third time. And the reason is, it's not rational. It's not correct. But they are afraid of the truth. They want it to be spun their way. It's why Bruce stood up, or sat down, rather, in his office and gave this impassioned speech about how Cousins is a greedy SOB and turned down the greatest offer of all time, blah, 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 whatever else, when in reality, that's not what the market says. You had less guaranteed years and way less guaranteed money than what the open market would dictate. They can't stand the idea of him being out in the open market and then getting the deal that they didn't believe would be there for him. So they will prevent it for one more year, and I think they're going to franchise tag him. I really do. Now, the pulse, though, I guess what I'm talking about is that it's difficult to quantify. You need one of those 538 stats guys to do a keyword search and kind of whatever the hell else. But everybody who covers the team, whether it's Liz Clark, J.P. Finley, at one point Mike Jones, at one point Kimberly Martin, whatever else, it went from Cousins, and this was still on the table. J.P. was talking all the time about the idea that you may still have the franchise tag in play. They could transition, whether it's Standig or Rich Taylor. Next thing you know, everybody's writing, and everyone's tweeting, and everyone's discussing. The pulse shifted from that to, this is the end for Kirk Cousins, or this could be the last game. This could be this. This could be that. The sense I've got is that all the reporters and guys that are connected to this team on a daily basis have now got it in their minds, whether it's via backdoor info or not, that this thing is now finally over, is that he is going to go somewhere else. So that's
Nobody
all, that's
has
all I'm observing.
Reported anything close to
no,
that.
No, I'm not saying it's reporting. I'm just saying it went from he's playing here, he's here, he could still be back, to this could be his final game. All I'm saying is the whispers are out there and the aggregated feelings are that that was the end this past week. Does it make sense what I'm saying? No one has come out with a hardcore concrete report because no one has it. No one knows, right? Nobody knows yet.
Okay. So you think that now's the feeling at Redskins Park in the local media is that he's not coming
yes,
back?
Yes, I think that's the feeling.
What changed?
That I couldn't tell you. All I know is I'm not there. All I'm doing is reading and observing. Every time something's printed, every time something's tweeted, I consume it, right? Because I follow who I follow. It's dozens of people, really, that cover the Redskins, national level, local level. The thing that has kind of leaked and all the crowd has rushed behind now has sort of, my sense is, everybody seems to think that it's over.
So the Jay Gruden press conference, that was interesting, and I'll get into some of his comments on Cousins in a minute, but he was asked about how he feels about Colt McCoy, and he basically said, listen, I'm not naming Colt McCoy our starter. He said, I'm just telling you that if we had to go with him, I would feel confident because he's been in the system for a while. But he was asked about Kirk Cousins' season, and his answer was actually really interesting. He basically was reluctant to heap praise. He wasn't overly complimentary in any way. He said, when you're 7-9, it's hard to say, wow, this guy was outstanding. He said he had his flashes, but he basically referred to him as being inconsistent down the stretch, which is fair, but he used the record 7-9 as an out to say that he wasn't outstanding, and now the negotiation's beginning, oh, by the
way.
Here
we go.
So you can't today come out and say, oh, he's one of the 10 best quarterbacks in the league. We know we can win a Super Bowl with Kirk Cousins. Because his agent's going to turn that around and use it against you. So he was doing that like a week and 2 weeks and 3 weeks ago, talking about how great Kirk Cousins was playing and all the things he had made better for the team this year. But it was almost like today the negotiation began.
Hey, Jay, do us a favor when you get to the podium. Water it down.
Dave Stafford, what's up?
Hey, Dave.
Hey, guys. How y'all doing? Happy New Year's.
Hey, man.
Thanks. You too.
Thank you. Just a couple points. And I won't argue his numbers. You can't take that away from him. But Terrell Pryor, I mean, look, he was a Pro Bowl receiver in Cleveland. You come to Washington, and we can't make nothing of him. I look at somebody like Jimmy G over in San Francisco, who has a lot less to play with. He's got a rookie tight end. He's got a guy named Goodwin I've never heard of. And how can he look like Tom Brady in that system? And we can't get anything out of Kirk. And I'll hang up and let you
know. I don't understand the question. Anything out of him? Like 4,000 yards
Look at Jimmy G. He went to San Francisco, a horrible team.
Yes,
I mean,
yeah,
they beat
true.
Up on Jacksonville. He has a rookie tight end. Goodwin, I've never heard of him in my life.
Well, that's
so
your problem.
He
was a
like
third-round pick. I don't know what to tell you. Thank you for the phone call.
Yeah, so he played well for five games. You could absolutely say that. I would take 48 games of pretty darn good play, Pro Bowl-level play, before I bet my farm on five games. But again, you know, Matt Castle says hi. It is impressive what Jimmy Garoppolo did. That's absolutely true.
He had a hell of a five game.
I would also add Terrell Pryor, not a Pro Bowler. Terrell Pryor stinks. He's not a good wide receiver. I was wrong about that, by the way. I thought he would be. He was a disaster. He stunk. You saw what happens when he gets a lot of targets. He doesn't catch many passes. He was deactivated, basically, because he's not very good. Good luck go getting that payday somewhere else.
The 49ers thing, I'm not going to take anything away from Garoppolo because he played really well.
He did.
They beat the Rams, who didn't play any of their starters yesterday. They had one good game against a good team, the Jaguars. Garoppolo looked pretty good in that game. They beat the Titans, who are the most overrated team in the league. They beat the Texans, who are terrible. They beat the Bears, who are an abomination by 1 point. So, I don't. If you want to crown Garoppolo after a month, you could do that. That's fine. You're allowed to. The guy you've never heard of, Marquise Goodwin, was the 78th pick in the draft. Covered him at the Senior Bowl in 2013. He's one of the fastest players in the league. He's an outstanding wide receiving talent. Was a superstar, speedy player at Texas.
And so he's wasted with C.J. Beathard and Brian Hoyer, who passed like I do, frankly. But again, going back to Garoppolo, it's what he did was impressive with a team that isn't very good. I think that needs to be stated. We're not taking anything away. But if you're going to crown him for going, quote-unquote, 5-0, let's look inside. Seven touchdowns, five picks, some things there that don't really jump out as that impressive kind of within that. But again,
threw for a lot of yards. You're going to throw for a lot of yards.
That's a bad cast.
Kyle Shanahan's offense, you're going to put up some numbers.
Yeah, that's a bad cast because he's much better than Beathard, much better than Hoyer. And we saw that. That's clear and evident. San Francisco's got their guy. They should absolutely build around Jimmy Garoppolo. They should do that and not hesitate.
Should we make guys have like a 2-to-1 touchdown interception ratio before we talk about them as being one of the best quarterbacks in the league?
No one's voting him to the Pro Bowl or saying that he's elite. I mean, maybe some guy from Pro Football Focus is. Maybe Cyan Fahey's doing that. I don't know.
By the way, did Terrell Pryor make the Pro Bowl last year? Did I forget about that?
I don't think he did.
No, he didn't. He didn't. He caught 70 balls because he was targeted 140 times. He dropped a ton of passes.
And I was wrong.
So
I thought he'd be good. I bought the Instagram videos.
Appreciate the phone call, though. Double Play is next. What's going on in our lives? Nothing to do with sports. Beltway Blitz at noon. We're Grant and Danny. Get a little look into our lives. Nothing to do with sports. It's our Double Play.
Danny Ruye, show review time, people. We got a new season, which means I ripped right through it. If you are not watching Peaky Flipping Blinders, I don't know what you're doing. Cillian Murphy, who is in all of Christopher Nolan's movies, is excellent as the lead actor, Tommy Shelby. It is about the Shelby family around the time of Prohibition. Now, Great Britain didn't have it the same way that we did, of course, where we adopted an amendment and everything was backroom bootleg, etc. But there were temperance movements and illegal alcohol and a whole bunch of other stuff. It's a gangster family where Cillian Murphy has one sort of foot in being good as part of society, the other part kind of taking care of his family in this cutthroat world. People are always out to get him. It is out bleeping standing. This is the show, in my humble opinion, Jeeps, that Boardwalk Empire should have been. Boardwalk Empire had all the right ingredients to be something that was so incredible and so epic, and yet always left me kind of felt wanting more. It was good, not great. This show is so perfect. The accents are awesome, but that's only the half of it. Writing is immaculate. The way the shot is incredible. They got the scenes, the tone, and everything about it. And this past season, and no spoiling anything, it is a mafia vendetta against the Shelby family. And it goes the entire six episodes. You can catch up quickly. Only six episodes per season, GP, BBC style. None of these 24-episode type long seasons that are too daunting to my pal. You could do 24 episodes in a weekend. That show is an A+. It is a must-watch Peaky Flippin' Blinders.
New Year's Eve is come and gone, and I'm reminded one more time, I think New Year's Eve is just overrated.
Sucks.
It's not a great holiday.
No.
The best thing about it is that you can occasionally get like some kind of a good crock pot food while you're at a New Year's Eve party. And I had a good time. I went out to a friend's house. We had like a house party. Everyone was kind of chilling, standing, whatever, playing games. Here's the problem. It's just the night where I would most prefer to sit on my couch and not off around 11 o'clock, only to wake back up just in time to watch the ball drop. Like, I'm guessing you were probably at your house and asleep by midnight.
I was not.
I would put all the money on that.
I was not.
Where were you?
I got roped like a calf out on the prairie into doing something. It's hard. It's long story short, but
did your son make it to midnight?
No, not even close. He made it to 7:15.
So he didn't come out with you?
No, we pretended that it was midnight for all the little kids at this gathering we were at. I had a stand-up show on the 30th, and a bunch of my buddies and some of their brothers and friends from out of town came to it. So I felt obligated to go to their party. And it was nice to see everybody. But the wife went home with the little guy at like 8:45 or whatever. And I went on to this party. I didn't get home until 3:45 in the morning. And I was beyond miserable. It was so late. You could not get a cab, an Uber, or a Lyft. There was no way for me to get home. And I was intoxicated. And
did you end up having to spend extra to get out of there?
Yeah.
Because they jack up all those rates
on
New Year's Eve.
A cab finally came, and I was like, when you know, you do the app or whatever, you're just like waiting and hoping. Finally, a cab was like, yeah, I'll be there in 35 minutes because he was coming from Glen Arden, Maryland, or some kind of nonsense.
So what time did you walk in your door?
3:45 on New Year's Day. 3:45 a.m.
Do you communicate with your wife at any point before you go to sleep?
No.
So you just get straight into bed.
Yeah.
There's no words said.
Yeah.
At what point the next morning are you woken up?
Initially,
she doesn't know at that point that you didn't get home till 4.
Right. I mean, she has an idea. She's probably stirred. Little guy woke up at 6:40, just
okay.
Get full of vigor.
Now, is there a conversation like who's going to go grab him?
No, she was nice enough to
she
take that on. Which she was most displeased.
At what point does she find out from you that you got home at 3:45?
At some point the next day, that day.
How did that go over?
Like a lead balloon. Not terribly well. She wasn't thrilled, but I explained. I was like, yes, obviously I was intoxicated, but not to the point I was like staggering around, embarrassing myself. I couldn't get out of there. I was drinking nice champagne, and I was stuck.
I
couldn't
always
get right
feel
home.
Like just New Year's Day, I get nothing accomplished ever. I'm very rarely off my couch.
Nor should you.
Or awake before 12 or 1. So I always feel just like I wasted a day. The only thing that was redeeming about yesterday, I ended up having a great dinner, but also the college football games last night.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that we had the classic that was Georgia and Oklahoma, which salvaged the day because it ended up that really Alabama was just dominant over Clemson.
It was boring.
But that we had one great college football game. There were other good games during the day if you had those on as well. At the end of the night is kind of your cap to the day. That made it all worth it.
Mm-hmm.
I always feel bad, though. If I wake up after noon and then I take a nap within the first few hours of waking up, I just feel like I didn't do what I was supposed to do today.
Today's not a great start.
I don't know what today was supposed to be. I don't know what I was supposed to have accomplished. I just feel bad about myself. There's like a little depression that sinks in.
You're building, though. You don't want to start out too high because then you're only let down after that. If you start off with the worst possible performance of your year, what you do today is how much more productive are you today? 1,000 times. We got in early to tape with Kirk Cousins. Just look what you already did today.
That's a good point.
Look at what you already have done.
We are back at work.
Got some water.
From a buddy who's a huge Bills fan. That's right. I have a friend who's actually a Bills fan.
Is he the guy that got defensive because we weren't, quote, talking about the Bills enough during the season?
I don't think
didn't
that
Didn't you have
happened,
somebody that happened?
Are you thinking of Joey as a Jaguars fan?
Well, yeah, Breadless Joe Jackson got Rick that we don't talk about the Jaguars enough.
Yeah, I don't know anyone that thought about the Bills.
Maybe someone was tweeting us. We're like, what about the Bills, guys? Sorry,
no, so I got this email from a guy. He goes, since I can't get anyone to go to Jacksonville with me, flying on planes, warm weather, kryptonite for us as Bills Mafia. He said, I'd like to invite all of you to join me to commemorate the Buffalo Bills for the first playoff game in 17 years, 11 months, and 30 days. So he's sending this email to all of us. None of us are Bills fans, by the way. The location will be Grand Central and Adams Morgan, the official D.C. Bills backers bar. He says, yes, that's a real organization. Kickoff 1 p.m. If you come, I'll buy you a fireball shot in honor of our friend Andy Dalton.
I don't want that at all.
He said, if anyone needs any Bills swag, I've got old jerseys. Take your pick. Sammy Watkins, Bakari Rambo, Paul Posluszny, Eric Molds, Willis McGahee, J.P. Lossman, Drew Bledsoe, and Bruce Smith.
By the way, that's just so crazy to me that those are the old Bills jerseys.
Right.
That's not even Daryl Talley. It's not Bruce Smith. It's not like guys from
Bruce Smith's on the list.
The Andre Reed era.
If you really want to get into the spirit, I think we can find someone to choke slam you through a flaming table. Hope to see you.
By the way, Grand Central's a good little spot.
Adams
Morgan. Yeah, it's a good little place.
That's apparently where the Bills Mafia is gathering for the playoff game.
So this is how they do hamburgers. I looked it up for you right there. They just put it right in a little
oh, I like that.
See what I'm, you know what I mean? It's
wrap
self-contained.
It in a little paper.
Yeah, it's awesome.
It's a good choice by them. I don't know if I'll make that party, but I like the idea of hanging out with Bills fans. I want success for that fan base.
Dude, we got to get if Luke Russert is back in the U.S., we got to get him on and talk about it. He's doing spin kicks, I'm sure. The fact that his Bills for the first time since Clinton was in office.
Thank goodness for them that Andy Dalton made that big throw.
Can you believe? By the way,
what happened to the Ravens?
Come on, dude.
Are you kidding
me? I'm sitting there, singing the praises of Emre Raymond's air horn because all of a sudden the offense got right and the defense down the stretch.
You're buying a hype.
I bought it. I go, this looks like.
I think you had him in the AFC title.
Settled down. You definitely said
they were going to give New England some problems.
I said they might give him problems. Not going anywhere. But it reminded me of like that team that got hot and like went and won the whole thing with Anquan Boldin making big plays in the end zone. And the Ravens just went right in their own bed. Oh, that was pathetic.
It was bad.
The Bengals stink, dude.
We'll go blitzing at noon. Grant and Danny on the Fan.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.